I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live podcast. This is a segment from last week's live video show. You can find either one of the live video shows on either Thursday at 7 p.m. or Sundays at 12:05. And now, on with the show. I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live. Please pay attention to our warning graphic. It states that the Retro Rogues Live show is intended for an adult audience and not intended for children under the age of 13. Parental discretion is advised. Again, I want to welcome you here to the show. On today's Sunday afternoon episode, we are going to be talking about the Star Wars Clone Wars, the two-day 2D animated series, sometimes referred to as the micro series. We're also going to be talking some news about Dune and actually a little bit about Conan O'Brien. I tried to do that, but I don't know if I quite did it right. Anyhow, I'm one of your hosts. My name is Dave Beatty. For the last 30 years, I've been a professional illustrator and graphic designer. Worked on a lot of fun things that some people have heard of, such as Batman Incorporated, Justice League of America, and even Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes. But enough about that. I want to welcome back my co-host. This is Mr. Eric Alexander. Eric, please tell the folks, hopefully watching or listening at home, some of what you've done as a creative professional.
Yes, hello everyone. I'm Eric Alexander, also known as Base God 14. That's Base God 14, not Bass God 14. That's Base God, like a bass guitar. And I am the chief financial officer of a small production company located in Arizona called Bad Bob Productions. Currently, I'm the executive producer on a film called Staycation, which is filming in California right now as we speak.
Very cool. Very cool. All right, are we ready to go ahead and get into our main topic here, Eric?
Yeah. Let's get into it.
All right. Okay. So our first topic today is going to be, again, the Clone Wars micro series. You can actually watch this on Disney Plus. The series, according to IMDb, ran from 2003 to 2005. A lot of people, again, refer to this as the Clone Wars 2D animated series. So this is going to be a Rogues retrospective. What does that mean, Dave? That means we're going to talk about how we first heard about the show. We're going to talk about a little bit about how we felt about it when we originally saw it. Then we're going to talk about how we feel about it today, having recently rewatched it. We want to encourage you, please, if you are out there, if you're watching on Facebook, if you're watching on Twitter, if you're watching on Twitch, it doesn't matter. Please comment from wherever you are. We're going to put your comments up. We want to know what you think. We want to know, just like us, how you heard about it, how you felt about it. And if you have rewatched it recently, how you feel about it today. Let's go ahead and start with you, Eric. Tell me, how did you first hear about the 2D Clone Wars?
So I remember the buildup to the series. I do remember hearing about it. You know, the internet did exist when the show came out, you know, not the way it does today. But I definitely had heard about it. I knew what the concept was going into it. I had cable at the time. I have since become a cable cutter. You know, I talk about that quite a bit, that I have an antenna and then I have various streaming services. I got rid of cable quite a bit ago, but I had cable when this show was coming on. So I used to watch Cartoon Network and I was very familiar with their programming and all that. And I enjoyed it. And so I was very aware that this was going to be coming out. And, you know, my understanding of it was, I think, the understanding that most people had of it, which was that this was going to be this sort of micro series, these very short episodes. I think they were anywhere from 2 to 3 minutes initially. Eventually, I think they went up to something like 12 minutes, something like that. But they started out being these very, very short clips that they would show. I think it was like on Friday nights before the major block of primetime programming on Cartoon Network. And it was actually something that I kind of looked forward to. And, you know, it was like, hey, this is going to be bridging the gap between, you know, Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, because even before the movie came out, we kind of knew that they weren't going to address the Clone Wars in a lot of great detail in the prequel trilogy, which is kind of interesting. So they decided to do it in an animated form. And I remember looking forward to it quite a bit. And I do want to acknowledge that Hollywood Jackson's the house. He says, hi, guys. So, hey, Hollywood, glad to have you here in the Rogues Gallery. And please let us know if you have any comments about the Clone Wars.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. So how did I first hear about it? It's kind of weird because I don't actually remember watching the micro series as it was coming out. If I remember correctly, I think it was my brother who actually introduced me to the micro series. And I think he either had it on DVD or we went out and bought a copy. If I remember correctly, I think my brother was actually in town visiting with me. My brother does not live in Arizona. He lives somewhere else and he happened to be here. And if I remember, we either went out and rented it or we bought a copy of it, but it was only the kind of the first season or the first set of episodes. It wasn't the second one. I remember us watching those and I was kind of surprised how I initially felt about it because I thought it was really kind of cool and neat because it's such an inventive vehicle to use to bridge the gap, as you said, Eric, between the narrative from, you know, basically the second movie, Attack of the Clones, into the third movie, Revenge of the Sith. And it was such an interesting idea to me at that time to use this as a vehicle. And I thought it was really cool. And I really enjoyed it. It was a little off-putting at times just because it's animated. And it has, at sometimes it's a little bit, it's weird because it's darker and whimsier at the same time. You know, it's at times as dark, maybe a little darker at specific points than maybe I think even Attack of the Clones, you know, the actual live action movie is. But on the flip side, it's also even a little bit more whimsy. And that was kind of an unusual. I mean, I didn't know quite. I mean, I liked it, but I didn't know how I quite felt about it when I originally saw it at the time. But I did think it was cool. And I remember going out of my way to try and search out to find the second DVD, hopefully, that had the remainder of the episodes because I wanted to watch those before I went into Revenge of the Sith. And I knew it was going to bridge the gap, but I didn't really realize how much important information was actually going to be contained in that second season of the 2D Clone Wars cartoons. I had no idea. And I was kind of surprised at that. To see them put so much important information actually in this micro series.
So I'm curious, did you see it then before or after you actually saw Revenge of the Sith?
I did see, if I remember correctly, I saw the first chapter, the first half of this before Revenge of the Sith, but I actually did not get to see the second half until after I had seen Revenge of the Sith. You know, it's kind of weird now, you know, almost everything's on the internet. You just dial it up, you know, and you watch it, right? Like, I texted you about this movie, Paper Tigers, that I actually watched actually last night, which we do pop culture. I'm going to talk about it just very, very briefly. It's going to be a micro review.
I'm actually looking forward to hearing about it. So,
actually someone who I watched it with had a really interesting way to sum it up, which I think is totally dead on. I actually remember it was difficult to find the second set of cartoons on DVD at the time. I don't know why it was. Maybe it was just where I was living at the time. Now, my wife and I were living in Arizona. We were in a more rural part of the state. So we were back then, I think if I remember correctly, we were still having to drive out to buy things. Like we'd have to drive to Phoenix to do some shopping. We'd have to drive to Flagstaff to do some shopping. So it was not uncommon for something to be out and other people to be able to just walk in the store and pick it up. But for us, it was more difficult. So I did see the second set of these cartoons after I had seen Revenge of the Sith. And I was surprised, again, like I said, how integral that was. It answered an awful lot of questions I had about where Revenge of the Sith starts.
And that's what's so interesting about this series is that it was literally just meant to bridge the gap, you know, between the two films, because, you know, literally Attack of the Clones ends with the first battle of the Clone Wars and Revenge of the Sith opens with the last battle, well, not the last battle, but basically the last major battle, if you will, of the Clone Wars. Right. So, the attack on the Capitol. So it's like, they're very much bookends of the Clone Wars, and yet there was this huge war in the middle of it that for Star Wars fans was kind of legendary, right? Because even Obi-Wan in the very first, the original Star Wars, had talked about the Clone Wars, right? And a lot of us, I remember, wondered what did that mean? were they fighting clones? You know what I mean? I think that's actually what most people assumed. And then it was almost kind of a little bit of a flip-de-doo, if you will, because it turned out that they were fighting with the clones. The Jedi were fighting with the clones, not against them. So it's kind of interesting, you know, in that regard, because this was the original way that you got any knowledge of what happened in between the two movies and what the Clone Wars was actually like. And that was, you know, the basic purpose of the show. Interesting thing, you know, you talked about your brother. My brother really liked this show, so I ended up buying him the entire collection, either for Christmas or his birthday 1 year. So he actually has a copy of it that I bought for him. Although I don't have a copy myself, I ended up rewatching it on Disney Plus.
Yeah, and I also I own them now, like I said, on DVD. But I did actually rewatch them on Disney Plus because I was just curious to see if it was any different. And the picture quality is obviously crisper. You know what I mean, on Disney Plus, because it's a higher quality transfer than the DVD, although the DVDs still look great, actually. They don't look bad at all. Now, let's go ahead and get into talking about, let's do how we feel about having just recently rewatched it, and then maybe we'll get into some spoiler talk. All right, so how do you feel about having just recently rewatched it for the show?
I think the first thing to note is if you did watch it in its original broadcast format at all, and if you're like me, you probably missed a few episodes here and there, because I definitely felt watching this recently, I just watched it yesterday, there were certain parts where I was like, I don't really remember that. You know, I don't really remember that. And I'm thinking I must have missed that episode, because it was episodic. It was presented in different little pieces. Like I said, the original format was like 3 minutes long. And then I think eventually they got it up to something like 12 minutes or something like that. But it was always still sort of like a micro series. You know, Cartoon Network was kind of famous for that at the time, of having these very like short shows and Adult Swim that were, you know, 15, you know, 12 minutes long, like Robot Chicken and things like that, right? That weren't they weren't the full half hour. And so it was an interesting format that they had. But if you watched it originally, you may have missed an episode or two, right? What's interesting about what Disney Plus has done, and this is also the same on the DVD, at least the collection that my brother has, they went ahead and edited it all into one big movie. I'm not saying it's bad. I mean, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed that presentation. So they're both basically, they do divide it. So the first two seasons are put into one, and then the last season is put into one. Officially, I guess it had three seasons. And so the volume one is basically season one and two spliced together. And then season three is all spliced together for volume two. And again, they're both like sort of like these hour long movies, mini movies, I guess you could call them, because they're only about an hour long. And the one thing I kind of wish is that you at least had the option to watch them as they were originally intended, because they were not originally intended to be a big, long movie. So that's, I don't know if it's so much a criticism, because I don't know if I would have enjoyed it any better. But I do kind of wish that you had that option to watch it as it was originally intended, just because I don't see any reason why they couldn't do that, you know, especially on Disney Plus, because it's just extra space on their server, right? So, and they're adding stuff all the time. So I can't imagine that's an issue for Disney Plus. So I do wish that they had that option. I can't say for sure whether I feel like it detracts or adds from it in any way. I did enjoy it in the way that it is presented today on Disney Plus, you know, as these two part movies. But I do feel like it would be interesting to watch in its original format, because I even wonder if the order is necessarily right. You know what I mean? If they did present it that way, because sometimes it feels like you're alternating between two different stories. And I can't remember if when they broadcast it, if they actually did it as the, you know, one story and then the next story, that kind of a thing, or if they did flip back and forth as they do, you know, in the edited format, you know, where it's all together. So, but there's a lot of great moments in this that I remember from back in the day, and it was kind of fun to experience them again. And the other thing that I really like about this, as opposed to like the 3D Clone Wars, which I think is much more popular, but you know, it's much better known, and it's official, you know, it's official canon under Disney Wars. The Clone Wars, this 2D version, is much more digestible than the 3D animated show is. And I feel like it gives you a lot more information that you actually need, you know, if you're a big fan and you are a fan of the prequels and all that kind of stuff. It kind of just gets you what you need and it gets you up to speed. And it also gives you sort of the raw interpretation of these characters that would become popular, you know, in the 3D version, you know, such as Ventress, you know, such as Grievous, you know, it gives you sort of the raw concept of what these characters were actually supposed to be before they kind of, in my opinion, in some ways got diluted, even, you know, in Grievous's case, even by the movies. I feel like this version of Grievous is a lot cooler than the version that we saw in Revenge of the Sith. And this is because it's in his raw form. And, you know, when I was doing some research for the show, I know that the director was actually talking about the fact that this is the Grievous as he was originally intended before George Lucas made some changes. And, you know, the way he described it was that Lucas actually kind of went more with the villain with the top hat and the twirling mustache who kind of does ha 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 and walks away and doesn't really do anything. When Grievous was supposed to, obviously, the original conception was that he was a Jedi killer. That's why he has all the different lightsabers, right? And this is the only version where you get to see him as a Jedi killer and get to see what he was like, that he was really supposed to be like this horrific kind of you know, warrior that was fully capable of taking out multiple Jedi at the same time and was essentially almost designed for that, you know? So a lot of cool stuff. And it kind of makes me feel like, you know, hate to say it, it's be controversial, but is Filoni really that good? Or did he just steal from this? You know what I mean? Did he, 'cause it seems like all the good ideas were already here in the 2D version.
Well, let's see. Let me tell you how I feel about it. I really enjoy the 2D Clone Wars. I do agree with you, Eric, that I feel like that if you're curious to learn more about what happened between Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith, and if the 3D version is too much of a time investment for you, and you're like going, man, I don't want to slog through however many seasons that is. This is kind of a different way to go, and it'll give you all the major beats that you need to know in order to connect the dots between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. So you don't have to go down that other road if you don't want to because of the investment in time that's involved. Now, I would recommend this just because I just thoroughly love the style and the approach and just the visuals of the Clone Wars. And what's interesting to me is I would say that I feel like, and this is how I feel about it, Eric. I feel like that when they did this Clone Wars, I think that they were thinking that this could be a companion piece that would, while not identical, but this would be a companion piece that would fit good, like on the same shelf with your Droids DVD collection and your Ewoks DVD collection. I feel like that they thought of this as kind of like continuing that Star Wars animation legacy because it's done in a 2D style. For example, like I thought C-3PO, he looks so close to the one actually from Droids that I just thought that was really kind of neat because it feels like there's a continuity with this that it kind of fits, you know, because when we were kids, you know, and we were watching, you know, the original Star Wars movies, you know, we had Droids and we had Ewoks on television, you know, towards the end of the original Star Wars films. And I feel like that was the original intention with this. Now, obviously, the 3D series expands, you know, the mythos and goes in completely different directions. For example, there's no Ahsoka in this. I mean, none of these things that actually came out of the Clone Wars that we think of as, you know, like, you know, well, let me not get too far into spoilers. But I just feel like that's what the original intention with this was. And I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. I still love it. I still think it's great. I think every time I rewatch these, I enjoy them more than before. I found myself laughing out loud at a couple of scenes and I was smiling the whole time and having a lot of fun with this. I really, really enjoy these. And matter of fact, I was texting Eric while I was watching them and I told him, I said that I feel like that what Battlestar Galactica, classic Battlestar Galactica needs is an animated series somewhat in this style. Like I feel like that would be an interesting way to continue the classic Battlestar Galactica legacy in some way, is to tell a story and then do it kind of like this. Because I think that would be neat if if there was something like that that existed. But what
I think that would be really cool as well. I do want to back up on your point about comparing it to the droids and the Ewoks. That's actually exactly what Disney Plus has done. They call it their vintage collection, which, man, the use of vintage is getting so confusing with these different corporate corporations and how they use it. But they put on, they literally do put it on the same shelf, literally, as the Ewoks cartoon and the droids cartoon, and also the Ewok movies, the Ewok television movies, Caravan for Courage and Battle for Endor. They literally are on the same shelf. So that's certainly Disney Plus's intention. But I would disagree with you on the point that that was George Lucas's original intention with this show, because I've always, even as a kid, when I liked the droid series and I liked the Ewok series and I liked the Ewok movies quite a bit. I liked all of that stuff when I was a kid. And I wouldn't be against revisiting that at some point on a future episode, actually getting into droids or Ewoks or one or both of the Ewok movies, just to see how I feel about it today as an adult, because I haven't watched them in a very long time. But the thing is that even as a kid, I could always feel that there were some continuity problems. Like, for instance, you know, the Ewok adventures officially are supposed to actually have occurred before, you know, Return of the Jedi, which makes absolutely no sense, because in the Battle for Endor, Wicket can speak English. You know what I mean? He can speak basic, whatever they call it in Star Wars lingo, right? He can speak English, which of course he couldn't, you know, in Return of the Jedi. So right off the bat, there were always issues. Droids is supposed to be a prequel. It's supposed to be the adventures of C-3PO and R2-D2 before Star Wars, which, you know, doesn't really fit. I mean, I think it would have actually been very obvious in both cases to just say these things happened afterwards. These are their new adventures, their continuing adventures, and then you don't have those continuity problems, right? This was meant to be part of the continuity, okay? The decision to make this, to not have this be canon, is Disney Plus's decision. Lucasfilm always said this was canon, and this was specifically made to bridge the gap between the two feature films. It was specifically made to complement the two feature films. The new series, the one that probably most people are familiar with and even most people probably like, you know, the 3D series, that's just its own thing floating out there in the nether, okay? That was done afterwards. The movies were out. They were done. They were established. And at the time, Lucasfilm always said the movies take precedence over everything else, including television shows, books, radio plays, all that stuff. They had a whole list of what the list of continuity was if there were conflicts. They always said the movies are first. The movies are always on the top. But they did still say that this was canon. And again, this was specifically intended to tell you the story between the movies. That's why it exists. That's the only reason it exists. And it kind of irritates me because, you know, Disney in their infinite wisdom has said that this isn't canon anymore. And I say, if you're a fan, you make your own canon and you decide on your own canon. Don't let the corporations tell you what's canon.
All right. So let's go ahead and get into a little bit of spoiler talk here, if that's okay. And again, I want to remind you, those of you who are hopefully watching, you know, please comment from wherever you are. Tell us, how did you first hear about the Clone Wars? You know, we want to know how you first heard about it. Tell us how you felt about it when you originally saw it back in the day. You know, did you see it as it was being released, or did you kind of see it after the fact on DVD like I did? We really want to know what you think. And if you haven't even seen it at all, that's okay. Tell us that too. You know, we're open. We're prepared to talk about it. And
if that's the case, hopefully you're going to be watching it this afternoon after the show, because that's the entire intention of this. It's the entire intention of this format is, if you haven't seen it or if you haven't seen it in a while, you hear us talking about it, then you decide, hey, I'm going to check it out today on this Sunday afternoon and enjoy myself and watch me some Star Wars Clone Wars.
There you go. There you go. That's the whole point. All right. So let's go ahead and get a little bit of spoiler talk here. So at this point now, we're going to be talking about spoilers for the 2D Clone Wars or the Clone Wars micro series. So let me just start off by saying that one of the things that I remember my brother was really excited and I personally really loved was the ARC Troopers. I thought the ARC Troopers were really fun. The Commando Squad. I remember at one point going to conventions and people would be decked out, you know, actually as the actual ARC Troopers. They had the proper red and blue coloring. And I, like, sometimes when people take a picture, like the one would do like the hand motions or whatever when they would take the pictures. And I thought all that stuff was just really, really cool. What did you think, Eric? Did you like the ARC Troopers too?
Yeah. And again, I feel like that's another thing where it's like, this is where they started all that, you know? Obviously, a lot of people love, what's the series on right now, right? It's Bad Batch. It's based on the Clone Troopers, right? And the fact that people like the Clone Troopers, okay? This show was all about showing the Clone Troopers, you know, in a really like special light, like making them not just be cannon fodder, right? And make it and showing them do things where they actually help the main characters. You know what I mean? They actually like, you know, are involved in you know, rescuing them and things like that, you know. That's one of the really good scenes in Volume 2. And that's part of that whole Grievous situation. It's just like they do some really cool things with the Clone Troopers that I know a lot of the fans love, and that's one of the big reasons they like, you know, the Clone Wars series. That's why they're doing the Bad Batch. They started it here, folks. This is where it started. I mean, granted, you know, they were pretty badass right from the get-go, you know, in Attack of the Clones, right? I mean, the Battle of Geonosis, it wasn't like they were some big slouches. But, I mean, this is the one that really starts to kind of show them off, right, where they're going to different planets and you start to see, like, they have names and they're, you know, they have their special teams and people that, like, you know, Obi-Wan relies on. I love Obi-Wan in the clone armor. Gosh, I love that. I wish they had incorporated that into the films. I don't know why they didn't do that, except George Lucas was probably like, well, that wasn't my idea. That was the Clone Wars director's idea, so I'm not going to use it, you know? Because I love that. I love that look because it makes sense. It's General Kenobi, you know what I mean? That's what we heard since the original Star Wars, General Kenobi, you know? He's not just a Jedi, you know? He's a commander. So, you know, I really like that stuff. And again, they did so much of that stuff here first, and it just makes me feel like the 3D Clone Wars, what really was standing on the shoulders of this series, you know, that's what it makes me feel like. And Hollywood Jackson has a different opinion here because he says they lost me after The Empire Strikes Back.
Well, that's
you know what's funny that you know what's funny is. I think I've told Dave this before, but The Empire Strikes Back was my least favorite, actually, Star Wars growing up as a kid. And the reason is actually pretty simple. It's actually pretty consistent with the way I view storytelling even today, was I was like, this is open-ended. There's no ending to this story. I mean, that's not the end. It was a cliffhanger, right? So I was very confused, and I was all like, I remember watching Empire Strikes Back as a kid, and right up to the end, I was all like, when are they going to get Han? You know, I know that the movie's pretty close to being over. When are they going to get him? You know, they can't just leave Han, you know, that's not cool. So it's interesting that you say that, Hollywood Jackson. So, you know, hey, I've always said, I don't care if the only thing you like is the Ewok Caravan for Courage movie, you're still a Star Wars fan and your voice still counts. It doesn't matter. Some of these people feel like, anything you slap the Star Wars name on, you've got to like it. And if you don't, you're not a real fan. Yeah, I don't agree with that at all. I think that's the most closed-minded, you know, BS, you know, imaginable. You like what you like. And guess what? You can pick and choose, just as I am right now, because I will say, you know, I really enjoy the 2D version. The 3D version, you know, not so much.
Well, Empire Strikes Back is still to this day my favorite Star Wars movie, but they did not lose me after Empire Strikes Back. You know, I've obviously kept up with pretty much all of it, but the thing that's interesting is I think after having recently revisited this, and you know it, I have been looking at animation style art a lot more lately. For reasons I can't explain just yet. But I have been looking at animation style artwork a lot lately, even more so than previously. And I had been trying to move in an animation style direction for quite some time. And I have always just really liked the style of this. And it's interesting how well it works and how good it looks in my own personal opinion. But I do love that scene, Eric, where there's the I don't remember if they actually give him a name or not, like the first kind of droid commander who has like the IG, like the black IG droids, and they're all like on the speeder bikes, like they're jousting.
Yes. Yes.
Man, that scene when Obi-Wan comes flying through there on the speeder bike and he kind of skids to the stop, and then you see him in that half Jedi, half stormtrooper outfit. Man, I've always loved that. I always thought that was so friggin' cool.
Yeah, I've always loved that look. And I've always thought that look was so cool and just so appropriate for showing, you know, who the character is at that point, right? Again, he's General Kenobi, you know, and yeah, I really enjoy that. And I enjoy that sequence. And I wish I could find the name of that character that you're talking about, because I know that that is a character that a lot of people liked and enjoyed. But I don't know his name off the top of my head. They don't name him specifically in the episode. I know that. Like, they don't specifically tell us what his name is in the episode. But as Star Wars does, they do name him in other sources. You know, like, I think he's named, like, on StarWars.com and things like that. Certainly on Wikipedia, I'm sure that they have his name on there. Because I think they did even make a toy of that particular character.
Well, and here's the thing I find interesting too, is that I feel like that character definitely inspired and was a precursor for Grievous, because when you look at those two characters in comparison, they're similar in that it's an organic, you know, almost like kind of like a cyborg. It's an organic being inhabiting a droid body, just like, you know, Grievous is. It's almost like Grievous is an upgrade of the one from before. So I just think it's interesting how all these things kind of go together. You know, it's like the chicken or the egg debate, right? You know, that kind of idea. But I just think that's really cool and really interesting. And then revisiting it this time, I found myself really enjoying it and laughing. Like, for example, I laughed out loud so hard I almost had tears when towards the end of the second part, because to me, I think of it in terms of how the DVDs were released. You know, you've got the first DVD that, you know, that did not really have Grievous or any of that stuff in it, and then the second one that did. Well, I think Grievous actually was at the end of the first one, but anyhow, I'm a little confused because I rewatched on Disney Plus and I just let it run like all the way through, and I forget where they had the break at. But
they intro Grievous at the end of volume one.
There you go.
And then they show what happens in volume two,
where the Grievous and the droids are after Palpatine. They're trying to abduct him, and they're at the elevator, and you've got like the hammerhead looking Jedi, mm-hmm. and they're all standing around the elevator, and it's kind of like a tense moment. He starts pushing that button.
Yeah.
I laughed so hard. It's not the same thing, but it reminded me of Rogue One. You know, with the rebel forces are trying to get those plans out, and Vader's coming down the hallway. It just kind of reminded me of that a little bit.
And yeah, I like that. I did like that. I noticed that as well. And it did give me a little chuckle. Yeah, that is pretty funny, where he starts pressing the button and everything like that. Yeah.
And that's the thing that makes this one, I think, in my mind, a little bit more fun than the 3D one. The 3D one is still good. But this one's got little touches like that kind of all throughout it, just little things like a character throwing another character a glance. And it adds so much character and personality to it. And, you know, there's this weird thing where they talk about how hand-drawn animation just has, at the end of the day, more life and just seems to communicate more than the 3D stuff does at times. And I feel like that's probably true. And I feel like that this goes to further exemplify that concept or that idea.
Yeah, I think there's a warmth to 2D animation that 3D animation just has a very difficult time emulating. You know, one great exception is, I think, what Pixar does. Pixar somehow is able to get over that, you know, get over that hump where their stuff does still feel very warm, even though it is cutting edge 3D animation. The Star Wars 3D doesn't do it. I think we're on the same page with that. I mean, it just doesn't have that same warmth and same emotion. In fact, a lot of people who don't like the 3D Clone Wars has nothing to do with the story. It's because they just don't like the style of the animation. So this is another contrast where if maybe you're kind of like, yeah, I don't really like that Clone Wars stuff. I don't like the look of that. Well, this is different. You know what I mean? And it does have its own distinctive look. Definitely, if you like something like Samurai Jack, this is the same guy who made Samurai Jack, made this thing, you know? And I always think it's also interesting that this is like a Warner Brothers production, essentially, you know, that this was before really Lucasfilm Animation, I think, was really even starting to do its own thing. Because I think they basically started the studio for the Clone Wars series, if I understand that correctly. So that basically this was something that was basically done, you know, essentially the way that, you know, Warner Brothers was making all of their original content on Cartoon Network at the time. So it's an interesting collaboration that would probably never happen ever again.
And Gindy Tartakovsky, the director of this series, is just incredibly, incredibly talented. And pretty much everything I've seen him do, I have loved or just thoroughly enjoyed. Like, I love the Clone Wars. Samurai Jack is just absolutely fantastic. And then he also is the one behind the Hotel Transylvania. Right. Movies, and I don't know if it's still on the internet, but at one point he was actually helping. I think it was DreamWorks, or maybe I'm confused. It was one of the animation divisions with one of the studios. They were actually developing a Popeye yes. CGI animated cartoon, and that was also Gindy Tartakovsky, and that was really great. I still don't understand why they didn't move forward with that project at that time, because that test footage is absolutely amazing. I personally prefer the 2D hand-drawn Popeye cartoons, but man, to be able to just get anything like that Popeye that's new would just be really awesome. And I thought it was really cool. Gindy Tartakovsky is a super talented guy, and I think his new series right now that's running, I think it's called Primal. Maybe I'm saying that wrong, but he does have a new series that's currently running that I think is mostly him. Like, I think he created it and developed it and pitched it and the whole thing. But no, the guy is incredibly, incredibly talented.
Yeah, I haven't seen Primal, but yes, that is his current work that's actually still available right now, that's still ongoing.
All right, very cool. Well, I feel like we're probably pretty good here, unless anyone in the Rogues Gallery has any other comments. We do have one.
Yeah, Hollywood Jackson, of course, is all for General Picard.
So. And would he be like in a half Starfleet, half Borg armor?
I don't know what he would be. Yeah, I don't know what he would be. He was supposed to be an admiral, right? But holy cow. Yeah, whatever.
Well, here's the funny thing. I'm wearing all this Star Trek stuff today, which I didn't think about. I'm wearing my Snoopy Star Trek shirt, and I've got my Star Trek hat on. The irony is I grabbed this shirt because it was clean, and I threw it on. And I was actually trying to grab a different hat. I was trying to grab my skull hat, and I grabbed this one by mistake. So it feels like I'm like railing against Star Wars today, but it's totally, totally accidental. It was not planned at all.
You're the Picardinator.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Well, let me just go ahead and say I'm going to fall on the side of I highly, highly recommend the Clone Wars 2D animated series. Again, if you can find the DVDs, they're probably still out there floating about in the probably on Amazon or places like that. I don't know how expensive or accessible they are, but I know they do exist. And then on the flip of that, I would also say, obviously, you can watch this on Disney Plus if you have a subscription to that. But I find... While I like the 3D Clone Wars cartoons, it's not that I dislike them. I think that at the end of the day, I am still always going to prefer this one more because I just feel like at the end of the day, it's just a little bit more fun and kind of more open, I guess is the best way to describe it. At times, I find it to be a little bit more surprising because it is a little at times kind of wacky and kind of fun. And I think that's really great. I personally think that's really great. What about you, Eric? How do you feel at the end of the day with the Clone Wars animated 2D series?
Well, I definitely push for this one over the 3D series. I think this is much more digestible. It's a lot easier to take. Again, I think Disney's decision to decanonize it is really stupid. As a fan, you can pick and choose. You can make your own canon and decide what it is that you believe in, what you like, and what you don't. And this was meant to be canon. This was meant to bridge the gap between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. And I think it does a pretty darn good of doing that with the 2 hours, you know, that it's allotted to do it in. far superior, I think, to the 3D version. And if you like the 3D version and you don't acknowledge this version, there's something wrong with you, because again, the 3D version, they're definitely standing on the shoulders of this series. There's just no doubt about it.
I don't know if we need to set this up a lot, but we're going to be talking about pop culture news. Anything that's caught either Eric's attention or possibly my attention. Hopefully at the very end of the day, we hope it's something that you find worthy of discussion. That's what we like to talk about here on the pop culture news. All right. So I do have a micro review. So I did actually last night, I did see a new film that I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed called Paper Tigers. If you want, we can't show you the trailer here because we'll get in trouble. But if you so desire, you can go on YouTube and do a search for Paper Tigers trailer. Apparently, this is a film that was supposed to come out, I think, actually at some point last year, but it got held up because of obviously everything going on, and I guess. It kind of got lost in sort of like its release. I feel like this is a movie under normal circumstances, at least among my circle of friends. I think there might have been more conversation or discussion about it under a different set of circumstances. So Paper Tigers is a totally brand new film. I'll give you the gist of it. It's basically these three guys who train together with their martial arts master. And this is all in the trailer. Their martial arts master is killed, and then they're trying to kind of solve the mystery. And it's an action adventure, but it's also a comedy. And my friend Sean, who I actually watched it with actually last night, Sean described it as, in his words, Big Lebowski meets Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Okay. Okay.
And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun with it. It's interesting because I feel like it's one of those films that's flying under the radar. Like, for example, when Red Belt, I don't know if anyone in the audience might have seen Red Belt, but when Red Belt came out, it was a similar thing. I didn't hear anybody talking about Red Belt. And then eventually I ended up renting it and watching it and thoroughly enjoying it. The end sequence, the end fight scene at the end of Red Belt is absolutely incredible. And this one is really cool too. And just so if you're curious to check it out, the trailer you can find on YouTube, again, Paper Tigers. I highly, highly, highly recommend it. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. It's definitely a departure from our usual kind of stuff that we talk about, because we do primarily do comic book inspired stuff. But I just found this to be a really fun, very entertaining movie with a fun sense of humor about itself. So I know that you heard about it, Eric, because I sent you the trailer. Did you get a chance to check out that trailer?
I did. Yeah, I did. I did check out some of the trailer. It does look like a interesting movie to me. I will say that it does look a little bit on the low budget end, you know, so kind of be prepared for that. But it's an independent film. So, you know, that sometimes just has to be part of the process, you know. So the thing that interests me the most is that Master Ken is in this. That's what really got me when you sent the trailer to me. I was just like, wait a second, that's Master Ken without his mustache. So I was like, if you don't know who Master Ken is, you're not living life properly. Okay. So Master Ken, of course, is the greatest martial artist in the world, the founder of Ameridote, the most dangerous martial art form in the world. And he's in this movie. So that alone gets me very interested in it, you know, just because I would love to see him in a feature length movie. He's not pictured here on the theatrical poster. He's not one of the main characters, but I will ask you, does he have a substantial part in the movie?
He has a very, very substantial part in the movie. When you watch the movie, basically he plays Carter, and Carter is a really, really important part of the movie. And he's kind of throughout almost the whole thing to it. I mean, not quite, but he's in well over half of the movie. They kind of use him as sort of like a storytelling kind of framing device. And it's interesting because there's a lot of rivalry actually between him and some of the other characters actually in the movie. And it's pretty good. I thoroughly enjoyed seeing him in it, and I thought he did a good job. Again, you have to remember, when you watch the trailer, while it has these really great sequences, like, for example, like, they have some stuff that was shot on VHS that's supposed to be the past, because basically these guys did what I've actually described on this show previously as dojo storming. Now, dojo storming is where you go to another school and you challenge the students, or you go to the school pretending to be basically a brand new student, and then basically you try to embarrass the teacher in front of the other students. Okay, I am probably going to hell because in a younger life I did dojo storming when I was a student, and it's probably not a good thing that I did that, but anyhow, there you go. That's probably why I'm going to hell, among many other reasons. But anyhow, this movie was so kind of at times I felt like not my story, but this really, I had a huge falling out with my sensei. We did not leave on good terms. It's just really interesting how connected I felt like to this story. So I might have enjoyed it too much because it really spoke to me. But if you see the trailer, I think you can see the sense of humor that it has, and that it's just an awful, awful lot of fun.
How did you see it, by the way, Dave? How'd you get a hold of it?
Well, what used to be Google Play Movies or whatever is now actually somehow rolled into YouTube or something. I still don't understand how that worked or why that happened that way. But anyhow, so it's all kind of one thing. So I actually watched it on YouTube. So I rented it through YouTube and then watched it through that. But then, you know, I have a lot of movies I had bought on Google Play because I thought Google Play Movies is never going to go away. Right. That's the thing that kills me. It went away. So it's really confusing for me now when I got to go back and watch all these stupid movies I bought digitally, which is funny because the whole time they were pushing the digital thing, they went, oh, you're going to have access to it forever, blah, 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 whatever. And it's like stuff keeps disappearing. I can't find things. The studio decides we're not with these people. So now you can't watch it anymore. So you go in and watch a movie that you bought and they go, oh, Paramount Pictures movies are no longer supported. They're now available on Xstream. And it's just like, what? Like, so, yeah. So I rented it. I would have bought it under different circumstances, but I've learned my lesson, Hollywood. You have taught me, do not give you too much money to own something because you will take it away in the middle of the night without telling me.
Yeah, and that's ultimately the criticism that a lot of people have of digital. So, yeah, that's interesting. So you can watch it on YouTube, and a lot of people might not even understand that you can now rent movies on YouTube. They've been doing that for a while, actually, but I have noticed that their library has increased quite a bit, and also their free movies have actually increased quite a bit. So that might be a good consequence of what you're talking about, because I have noticed there's a lot of free movies available on YouTube now that are, you know, they're official. You know, they're official. It's not just some guy uploading the movie and pirating it. Now YouTube has a lot of official movies on there. But this particular one you're saying you have to rent, right? I'm guessing what, like $3.99, something like that?
Yeah, I think it's just like most digital stuff. There's a standard definition and a high definition, and you just have to determine where your threshold is as far as what you want to do. I actually paid for the high definition because I like to see it as the picture as clear as I can get it. But it's so ironic because here lately, because of all the fires and everything that's going on, I've noticed that we've had a lot of buffing errors of late. So it actually did buffer at one point in the film. And then when it came back, it was kind of lower resolution for a little bit, which is a little annoying. But overall, like I said, I really, really enjoyed this film and highly recommend. If you like martial arts movies, if you like to laugh, if you definitely understand the concept of getting older and not being able to do the stuff once upon you did before, which I think I know I can definitely relate to, this is really, really a highly, highly entertaining movie, and I highly recommend it.
Very cool. And as Hollywood Jackson says, you lease the rights these days. There's no physical copies. That is the truth, Hollywood. That's, I think, the best way of looking at it. You lease movies these days, even if you buy them.
Yeah, that's true. Sucks. All right. Very cool. What do you have for pop culture this week, Eric?
Well, I've seen some other folks talking about this, and I know this is something you've been interested in because we've talked about it before. And I only recently found out about it. In fact, I only found out about it today, even though this story is a couple days old. So I've got a Variety article up here, and it's dated June 25th, so this couple days old. But I only learned about this today. So that the headline reads, Dune shifted 3 weeks later in Warner Brothers release date shuffle. So it says the wait for Dune just got a bit longer. Warner Brothers has shifted the sci-fi epic to 3 weeks later, putting it at October 22nd. It was previously set for October 1st. The move was part of a larger release date shuffle by Warner Brothers on Friday. The Many Saints of Newark was pushed back 1 week, taking the original spot held by Dune. The Sopranos prequel will now launch on October 1st, a week later than its previous date of September 24th. The shuffle also affected Clint Eastwood's upcoming film Cry Macho, which was bumped up 1 month after Dune took its previous spot. So Cry Macho will now release on September 17th, 3 weeks ahead of its prior date of October 22nd. So I did want to put this in a little bit of context that apparently something has happened over there. I really wonder what it is that they're looking at. This is, of course, now it's going to be, you know, Warner Brothers Discovery, right? Why they decided to do this shuffle, because it's not like super substantial, but they are moving these films. So I'm just curious, Dave, if you'd heard about this and what your thoughts are on them moving Dune back a couple weeks and apparently some other movies as well.
No, I hadn't heard about them shifting it around, but you know, delaying movies is just like the order of the day, isn't it? Like, isn't that just what?
Well, not really. I mean, no. I mean, I would say no. That's not true. I mean, they've been pretty good ever since they announced their schedule and this whole scheme to release the movies simultaneously, theatrically and digitally. I thought they've been pretty good about keeping to their schedules. I could be wrong, they've been pretty good about that.
This is
post that, you know what I mean? That's my point. So
all I'm saying, I'm talking in generalities, not specifically about Warner Brothers, because there's still a lot of films that, you know, they keep monkeying with the release date, not Warner Brothers necessarily, but a lot of the other studios as well. It seems that they're still trying to figure things out. I honestly have no idea why they shifted the schedule around, unless they want to try and ramp the excitement back up for Dune, and maybe they feel like they need a little bit more time to get some buzz going before the release of the film would be my best guess.
Run out of all their buzz if they're not, like I said, I didn't even hear about this when this actually happened. I happened to see another YouTuber talking about this and was all like, I didn't even know. So I feel like they're going to have the exact opposite effect. If they keep delaying this stuff, they're going to have no hype at all.
Now, just to be sure, they pushed it off of the October 1st date?
Right. That was the date that it was previously said to be releasing at, was October 1st.
So last night...
And they moved another movie into that spot.
And when did this report come out?
The 25th.
Okay, that's interesting. 2 days because ago. I guess I was mistaken, but I, you know, after we finished watching Paper Tigers, we were looking for something else to turn on, and we were on the Warner Brothers app for a little while until I had some issues with it. I had to turn it off because I have issues with the Warner Brothers app wanting to load stuff sometimes. And then when I get done watching something, it kind of crashes and hangs at my television. I don't know what that's all about, but.
You're talking about HBO Max?
HBO Max, yes. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just asking for clarification.
Yeah, HBO Max. And what was interesting about that is we were looking at the stuff that was coming up, and I thought it still said that Dune was coming out. Maybe it just said October, and I just remembered the first because maybe we talked about it before. But I remember going, oh, that's right, it's going to be on the HBO Max service. So if I don't want to go to the theater to see it, I can just watch it at home. I was like, well, that's kind of fun, you know, because if I'm paying for the services, I'm trying to watch what's actually coming on the service, you know, normally. But if I have to pay more for it, I'm actually going to the theater to watch. Like, for example, I told you, we're going to watch Black Widow in the theater because I don't want to pay for that premium service. But if it's going to be on the service, why not, right? And then, you know, if I feel like I'm missing something, then I'll go to the movie theater and watch it in the movie theater. I don't mind, you know, watching it twice or maybe paying to watch it twice. I don't have any issues with that, but... I don't know. I don't know what the point of shuffling the release schedule is, other than for example, as we've experienced, like a lot of people are having a hard time finding us on Sunday. They're not sure what time the Sunday show is. You know, Warner Brothers is going to create the same problem. People are going to be looking for this on a certain date and it's not going to be there. It's like, it's not coming out till the end of the month. What the heck, man? Like, so if they're not careful, people are just going to throw up their hands and just forget about it.
Yeah, I think the studios in general are at the point that they're in danger of doing that, you know, and they have to be really, really careful because, you know, they already made this move, you know, where they basically said, hey, for our 2021 slot of films, we're going to release them at the theater and HBO Max simultaneously. They've been doing it. They've had some actually pretty good success with like Godzilla versus Kong. I think most people consider that a pretty good success. You know, as far as the theatrical window, you know, within these times as they are. But it's like, I don't know. It just seems weird to delay it a couple of weeks and then push everything else back. So I do kind of wonder what the thinking is behind that. And it seems, you know, you on the surface of it, you think like they're trying to make room for something else. But it's like, what else are they trying to make room for? You know, so it's like the two films that are going to be preceding this, I feel like there's almost no buzz on them at all. But then again, like I'm not a big Sopranos fan, you know, so maybe people that are Sopranos fans, maybe they're really looking forward to that other film. And I didn't even realize Clint Eastwood was coming out with a new movie, honestly, until I read this article. So there's definitely some problems with the hype machine right now in my mind, because I'm not hearing about these movies and I'm not hearing about this news. I'm hearing other YouTubers talk about it. And then I'm like, oh, well, maybe I should talk about this because we've been talking about it, but somehow it's not on my radar, you know? So they're doing something wrong because otherwise I'm not going to see it. Right. So it's kind of strange what they're doing right now, especially after they made this bold move. It's like, hey, you made this bold move. You know, you kind of need to just stick with it and see it through. Right. Because you've had some success with it, but you know, who knows? I don't know how 2 weeks is going to make that much of a difference. You know, it's like, really? I don't know.
Yeah, and I have been really looking forward to this movie, and you know, have been trying to keep my ear out for when it's coming out. You know, because I'm actually a big Dune fan. I actually have almost all the books actually on my bookcase back over here. There's even a couple of first editions over there. And I really, really like Dune, and I love the David Lynch film. I love the original books. To this day, God Emperor of Doom is still one of the trippiest covers and one of the craziest things I've ever read. That's what actually got me into looking into the books. So I'm really excited about this film, but yeah, if you know, they are running the risk even with me, and we try to keep up with this stuff, and I would have been looking for it on the first and then been like, well, I guess I was mistaken. I guess it's not coming out for a couple more weeks or something. That's weird. So
yeah. Yeah, it's strange. But as we say, Warner Brothers definitely does strange things. And as Hollywood Jackson says, good help is indeed hard to find. That is so true. And he also says Mule was just disappointing. I don't think I am familiar with that, Hollywood Jackson. Are you familiar with that, Dave? Mule?
Yeah, Mule was that Clint Eastwood movie where he's basically the drug mule. He's like a retired guy.
I did see the preview for that. I did see the preview for that. Yeah. So I'm sorry to hear that it was disappointing, Hollywood. I guess ultimately I decided after watching the teaser to pass myself. So maybe I shouldn't be so disappointed because I just watched it.
You know, I saw Mule when it came out. My wife and I, we saw it actually with her father. I think we actually saw it, if I remember correctly, I think we saw it while we were in Mesquite, Nevada. But yeah, I remember going and seeing the movie. And I liked it okay, but it just wasn't anything that I necessarily felt compelled to talk about. Like Gran Torino, I felt like was probably a stronger movie.
I think Gran Torino is awesome. I love that movie. You know, so, that's definitely the kind of movie that I enjoy. I think Mule ultimately, this the whole premise, I was like, do I really care about this guy? You know, no. You know? It's an interesting story, right? It's an interesting story.
Right.
But just for me, I'm like, nah.
Yeah. Well,
I don't really care about this particular person, you know. So, and I'm not talking about Clint. I'm just talking about like the real guy that this was based on or whatever, you know. It's like,
right?
Nah. No, thanks. You know, well, the one I actually did want to see was the one about the about the security guard from the Olympic bombings in Atlanta. Gosh, I can't remember his name. I feel so bad. I can't remember his name because, you know, I felt very strongly that the FBI just totally dragged that guy's name through the mud and destroyed his life. I'll tell you, I'm not a big fan of the FBI. I'm really not. I've worked with them and I'm not a great fan of them. If you talk about federal agencies, the ones I have great respect for are the marshals and the postal inspectors of all people. I have a lot of respect for both of them. So I'm not a federal government hater. So don't start doing that. Okay. But I've worked with these different agencies and those ones really impressed me. So, but I'm just saying like they destroyed the man's life. And I did want to see that movie. My brother saw that movie. And gosh, I still can't think of the name. And it's the man's actual name, I think.
I remember seeing the trailer for that, but I can't remember the name of it either.
But my brother really liked that one. He said that that was actually a really, really good film. And again, I thought that the content was really good. And I know that the media was really upset about it because the media also was complicit in destroying this man. So I wish I could, I can't remember his name. Not terrible. You know, I'm even trying to look up like Clint Eastwood movies. But it's probably not going to show up on an initial search because I feel like they kind of suppressed this movie in a lot of ways. I'm trying to look up. There we go. Richard Jewell. There we go. See, I got it out there. Richard Jewell. Yep. Micah saved me too. Thank you, Micah. I appreciate that. Yeah. Richard Jewell. It's a story worth telling. We don't get political on this show, but it's a story worth telling because I really do feel the FBI and the media ruined this man's life. Bottom line, they ruined his man life. And it's a story about don't rush to judgment, you know, and don't always trust authority because sometimes authority is wrong. You know what I mean? So not always, not even most of the time, but sometimes they're wrong. So you got to question things, you know, you got to question things. And actually it's funny because I can go right into my next story because I'm going to stay on my high horse right now. I'm not getting off of it. By any means here. So I did want to talk about something, and I briefly mentioned to Dave the context of why I want to talk about this. So a lot of folks, I think, especially in my age group, you know, you remember Conan O'Brien probably quite fondly back from his, you know, late night days, you know, before he actually got on The Tonight Show. This is pre-Tonight Show era and then pre-TBS era, right? That's where I remember Conan from, okay, is back when he took over for David Letterman, okay? And I fondly remember those days, and I thought he was quirky and silly and all that stuff. Then, of course, he bombed on The Tonight Show, and then there became this big thing with him and Jay Leno. And, of course, since Jay Leno's kind of conservative, all the media turned on him and said he's a big jerk and blah, 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 and it went back and forth. And then Conan wound up on cable, right? That's where he ended up. Well, as of a couple days ago, he's no longer there. He has given his farewells. And what I have up right now is an Entertainment Weekly article. And the title reads, Conan had an awkward farewell, but Conan O'Brien isn't going anywhere. The host left late night in a sincere, meandering, clip-heavy finale. And by the way, I just want to say this is a total shill article, okay? Because this article is just like, Conan's not really gone. You know, Conan's still doing strong. The reason I'm bringing this up, okay, is because I feel like there is something happening that's a combination of the pandemic and also what Dave and I are doing at this very moment, which is doing basically a talk show, you know, a commentary show. You know, we don't normally have guests. We have guests sometimes on this show. But we're doing a lot of the same thing that these guys used to do, right? You know, we don't have a little band necessarily, and we don't do sketches and stuff like that. But there are people that do. you know, Doomcock basically, I've listened to some of his live streams, and they're really entertaining because it almost sounds like an old radio show, some of the stuff that he does. Because he'll do like little sketches, and he will sing, and he will do stuff like that. And I feel like in a lot of ways, talk shows in general, and it's the combination of the two. There's no doubt that the pandemic affected them as well, because a lot of these shows, their production values became less than ours. You know, there's just no denying it. When you look at some of the stuff that like Colbert was doing and all these other late shows and stuff, dude, their stuff was like below YouTube quality in terms of the production value that they were putting out there at the height of the pandemic, you know? So I do think it's both things, but I do feel like YouTubers have had an effect in basically kind of taking the mantle away from a lot of these talk show hosts. And I'm curious, Dave, you know, as a fellow commentator yourself, how you feel about this and if that is an appropriate context or if it's something completely different that I'm missing.
Well, I will say that I remember at the time when Conan emerged that the conversation amongst my friends is that Conan seemed like the idea was that he would be like our generation's Johnny Carson. You know, he had a different sensibility. He had a kind of a different sense of humor. A lot of his, you know, bits and stuff and his quirkiness kind of appealed, you know, a lot better to my friends, right? So I remember at the time feeling like that maybe the idea was they were grooming Conan to be like another generation's Johnny Carson, in my mind anyway, is what I thought that they were attempting to do. And move it all in a different direction. Of course, we know how all that went. But no, I feel like you make a good point, Eric, because I have noticed, like, for example, not in YouTube so much, but there are a lot of actors and comedians and stuff that are now doing primarily podcasts, actually audio-based podcasts. There's a lot of them going to doing podcasts now, and it seems like with the pandemic, it's actually ramped a lot of them into doing even more content than I think they might have done otherwise. And I do feel like, to an extent, that I think we've been in the midst of a paradigm shift for quite some time, but I don't think anyone's realized that we're in the midst of a paradigm shift to the degree that we have been slowly moving in. You know, so I'm not too surprised. I mean, I imagine that, you know, it'll be like all other things, you know, there might still be, you know, the Late Show with whoever, you know, maybe the Tonight Show with whoever, you know, like, I feel like a couple of those will still stay as long as the networks are able to kind of hold on. But as we continue to move further year after year after year, I do believe like this shift is going to continue. And I can see that their audience is probably being eroded away because you also have people doing more niche driven shows like ours, for example, you know, our Collector's Corner episode on Thursday where we're doing kind of like a late night talk show kind of a format, but it's more interactive because you can respond right to us and we can respond to you. Number one, that makes it more interactive. Hopefully people feel more connected to it. And then the second point is it's really niche driven because we're talking about those things that hopefully people really like. If you're into the comic book stuff and you love these characters and you're watching the movie, the TV shows, you know, we're talking about that and we're showing you kind of trading cards and comic books that relate to that. So it directly speaks to people that are into that particular interest or into that particular niche. You know, like for today, we were talking about the animated Clone Wars show. We had almost an entire show focused on that, right? And I, you know, these late night shows and whatever, they're not going to do that. And while they still probably have a large audience, I could see with the younger generations probably being eaten away because they're drifting towards, you know, channels where they're talking about video games, right? Or they're just talking right about memes, or they're talking about, you know, TikTok videos or whatever it is that speaks to different people. So whatever it is you're into, there's a podcast, there's a YouTube show for that. And I know a lot of those YouTubers right now, I think it was at Den of Geek, for example, they've gone to producing shows every single day, one in the afternoon or morning, I think, and then one in the evening. They're producing tons of content. So I don't see how, even with the money that they have, sometimes these late night shows can compete with that because these people are on twice a day. And right, they're talking about the stuff that the younger generation is definitely into. So it's just going to continue to kind of erode. I feel like that there's been a paradigm shift.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because in a lot of ways, Conan has been stuck in the middle of two shifts in my opinion. Because you talked about Johnny Carson. I've mentioned this on the show before. Johnny Carson, the end of his era, really did represent the sort of, you know, the end of late night as we knew it growing up as kids. You know, yes, there was Arsenio, you know, he kind of tried to come in there and he tried to compete with Johnny at the end and stuff like that, but it was really no contest. It really wasn't. And Johnny Carson was the undisputed king of late night for a very long time. And lots of other people, you know, tried to dethrone him. Chevy Chase at one time tried, you know, Joan Rivers, that's their kind of famous, rift. I guess, you know, my understanding is that Johnny wouldn't even speak to her anymore after that incident, after she tried to do her show. He really was the king of late night. And I feel like, you know, the whole thing with Jay Leno and Dave Letterman, that there was this kind of false fight going on where they were both kind of saying, well, I'm going to take over Johnny's mantle. Johnny's mantle was gone at that point. You know what I mean? Johnny's mantle, nobody was ever going to take that. It goes along with what I talk about, the vinylization of media. The old thinking is that you replace something, right? That something new comes out and it replaces the old thing. Like, for instance, when you had, you know, quote unquote CDs replace vinyl. Well, what does that look like now? CD is going away. Vinyl's coming back and has been coming back for years, right? You can get vinyl at Target, right? There's a couple CDs there too, but you can get vinyl at Target and there's more space for the vinyl simply because it's bigger than there is for the CDs. Think about that, okay? So that corporate mentality is just wrong. It's just it doesn't work that way. It's like you said, it's more niche. You know what I mean? It's more your little niche, however you pronounce it, right? That's where media is going, right? It's not about superseding something and taking it over. It's not that suddenly YouTube is going to become the king of late night, right? And no, it's going to have to exist right alongside the Tonight Show and all these other things. Johnny Carson ain't happening ever again. That's not happening ever again. And the idea that you're going to have that happen is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And the other side of it is, the more modern side is, if you cannot compete with the YouTubers, if you cannot compete with the meme generators, and you can't compete with the people that are into gaming and all that kind of stuff, you're going to go the way of the dodo. You know, and it's funny because Conan did do some cut. I don't know if you saw, but near the end of his run, he was doing this awkward gamer thing. Like, he was doing this, like, I'm the worst gamer in the world bit that I thought was actually pretty funny. It's one of the few things recent of his that I was really watching because I thought it was really funny, because he was doing video games and he was showing how much he sucked at them because that's not his thing, you know? And he would have guys that actually knew about the games on the show, and it was kind of an interesting idea. But ultimately, it doesn't sound like it worked, you know? So I feel like he was squeezed on both ends. You know what I mean? There was sort of like the end of one era, the beginning of another, and somehow Conan never really fit. You know what I mean? Even though he's had a successful career, I'm not trying to take anything away from him. He's had a successful career. He's had a good run. But ultimately, it feels like he never fit in either model. And he kind of was, you know, he was kind of behind the curve, you know, both times. You know, one time, you know, it's like he's trying to be the next Johnny. You know, that train had sailed a long time ago. You know, there was going to be no more Johnny. And at the same time, he tried to catch up with the meme culture and sort of the more of the millennial culture and the stuff that's more contemporary. And somehow that didn't seem to work out either.
Well, it's interesting because I feel like that I can relate to that idea of being in between. Because when I entered into the job market, you know, trying to get work in comics and to work as an illustrator and a graphic designer, you know, it was at the tail end of traditional media, as far as traditional art media. So I'm talking like pen on paper, you know, paint on paper, you know, stat cameras, you know, hand separating, you know, colors, like, you know, rub down type, you know, all of those things still existed, and they were still very much a fixture in the art production world, and computers were beginning to emerge in a more dominant way, because with the personal computer, all of a sudden, smaller studios, smaller offices, smaller production facilities, whatever, could now go out and have the same capabilities to an extent that a lot of the larger, printing companies and, advertising, agencies and whatever, all of it was like a democratization, for lack of a better term, right? All of a sudden, the stuff that was available only to the high end now is becoming available actually to everyone else. And so when I first started, all these traditional skills were important to have. They were very, very important to have. And then eventually that began to fall away. And it seemed like that the digital skills were what everyone really wanted. And that was what was really important, understanding how to program for websites, understanding how to use things like Illustrator and Photoshop to a greater degree than someone else. And your ability to use those programs sometimes almost guaranteed you a job, even if you didn't necessarily have the greatest resume in the world. If you had a certificate that was certified by Adobe that said you could use Photoshop, you had a leg up over someone else who didn't have that certificate. It was just a really weird, it was like a strange hodgepodge world. And then eventually digital emerged, kind of as the dominant controlling force to an extent. And then like you're talking about with the vinylization, right, of media, traditional is beginning to come back, and those fundamental drawing skills at the end of the day are turning out to be, those fundamental painting skills are turning out to be the really important thing. At least that's what I'm seeing at the end of the day. But it's a weird thing where, I've always felt like professionally, like I've never really at times like fit in, because, there's certain jobs I get because of my digital skill set. There's other jobs I get because of my traditional skill set. But my peers who came after me and my peers before me, it was different for them. They only had to learn how to use one skill set, really. Like they needed to know how to draw and how to execute at a certain level, and they were good. And they had a career that way. And then the ones coming up, they need to know how to draw and how to execute, but they primarily need to understand a digital platform. It's so weird. And then there's a lot of people I know, like that I went to art college for example. And I feel like we got squeezed in that middle too, where it was hard to figure out where you fit in, because you had to either be a little bit of both or you were not wanted. It's a weird feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the thing. I think that's exactly the thing. And I find it strange that so many like executives, I don't think can figure that out, or they're barely figuring that out, because it's always been about, one era ends, another one begins. And it's like, it ain't that way anymore. It just isn't. It's just not the way it is. So again, I feel like Conan in a lot of ways got caught in the middle of that, as many Gen Xers do. I'm a Gen Xer, and I feel like Gen Xers really are literally caught in the middle, because of dealing with, what the boomers have done, and then also dealing with millennials, in the workforce. I didn't appreciate that very much. I'll just say it that way. I really didn't, because I didn't like either of them that much. I'll just say it, in the workforce, I really didn't. But at the same time, I really looked up to like the greatest generation. And that's what Johnny Carson represents, right? I looked up to those people, those are the people that I looked up to, but again, that's also a different era, and that's not coming back, So the bottom line is that I do think that this is kind of a little bit of a watershed moment. I don't know if this is going to be a trend, like if we're going to see more dominoes fall when it comes to the talk shows. I'll tell you, I feel like daytime talk shows is really saturated, and I'm like, who watches that stuff? Sometimes I'm really like, who watches this stuff? Like everybody, Kelly Clarkson, Drew Barrymore has a show now. It's like, who watches this stuff? They've done everything they can to get rid of Housewives, right? So, that's no longer even considered a viable option, which is disgusting to me. But, it's like, so who watches this stuff? I'll tell you, I don't. So I don't know who watches this stuff. No.
But again, too, they still have to fill those programming hours. And if those shows can be produced for a modest budget and you have a name attached to it, I could see why a lot of studios would just roll the dice and give it a shot. And what's interesting,
interesting you say that, because when you talk, when I was talking about the low production values, that's probably benefited them in some ways, right? Because some of these shows actually were coming out, you know, very close to when the pandemic started. And so it's like you could make this show on a much less budget because they were doing what we're doing. They're talking right over the computer the same way you and I are, you know? Right. And suddenly that's a network show, you know? Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think some of those too, I think they repurposed those as audio shows too. Like I, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's there.
A lot of these people do have podcasts. You're absolutely correct. In fact, they even said Conan has one and his podcast isn't going away. That's in this article. So it is true. A lot of them do have podcasts and a lot of them do stuff like that now too. So it does make it, I guess, a very saturated market, you know?
All right. Well, there you go. Very cool. All right. Do you have anything else for pop culture?
Nope. That's all I could scrape up.
Do you have anything for Streaming Wars today or?
No, I haven't had anything on Streaming Wars in quite a while. You know, I don't feel like there's been any big moves or big shifts recently, but I'm definitely trying to keep an eye on it. And I'm definitely trying to keep an eye on some of those numbers, those elusive numbers. Yeah. As I mentioned before, yeah, I feel like Samba TV has an approach that is very limited, and then Nielsen's it's always out of date. So it kind of sucks to get good numbers and stop sort of all the rampant speculation that people have about whether this is successful or it isn't. You know, the studios right know, but they're not letting the public know. You know, so
right,
kind of weird situation.
Well, there you go. All right. Well, unless anyone in the Rogues Gallery has anything else they would like to talk about, post about it now. Otherwise, I think we're just going to go ahead and work our way over to the outro, unless you have anything else you would like to add. Eric?
Just remember, if you've missed anything, we were talking earlier about the Star Wars 2D micro series, the 2003 series. If you missed any of that, you can always catch it on the replay. It's a live show, but we always keep everything up. So unless YouTube takes it down, it'll be up there
right,
and you can check it out on the replay. So always consider that if you came in late to the show.
Yeah. And then in addition to obviously the replay of the video show, there is also to the audio show, the audio right podcast. And that's available on, you know, Anchor, Spotify, what do they call it? Apple Podcasts, or I forget what it's called. Anyhow, we're pretty much on every single major podcast platform. All you need to do is just search for Retro Rogues and you should be able to find it. And then there are links, as Eric puts up the URL for my website, there are links on my actual website at davebeatty.com. That's davebeatty.com. You can check it out over there. Okay. All right. If no one has anything else further, I think we're going to go ahead and say that this episode is in the can. So I want to thank you for hopefully watching or listening to this episode of Retro Rogues Live. Again, my name is Dave Beatty, and I have been one of your hosts. If you're curious to see one of the things that occupies a lot of my time, definitely go over and check out KirbyTees.com. KirbyTees.com is my t-shirt company. We should have some new designs rolling out on there very, very soon. We do have a lot of stuff available still at this moment, such as Sarah Aerosmith's Brains Are Magic, the collaboration between the Janimal and myself, the Skeletor, and we have a selection of Retro Rogues Live t-shirts there as well. Again, that's at KirbyTees.com, KirbyTees.com. You know, please consider purchasing a Retro Rogues Live t-shirt and actually supporting what we're doing here. We would greatly appreciate your support. And along those lines, would again encourage everyone, please tell people that you know about the show. Please share the links, on social media, and, you know, encourage people to come on the show. One of the things that makes this show fun and entertaining for us is when people in the Rogues Gallery and they're commenting. And that's one of the things that's kind of unique about our show. There's no barrier to entry in terms of cost. All you need to do is just come check out the show, comment, we'll put your comments up, and you can actually be part of the discussion. That's one of the important things here at the Retro Rogues Live. I want to thank those of you who are in the Rogues Gallery today, commenting and talking. We greatly appreciate your support. Eric, please tell the folks, hopefully watching or listening at home, where they can learn more about you on the interwebs.
Yes, I'm most active on Twitter, so you can find me there at BassGod14. That's at BASSGOD14. My DMs are always open, so you can reach out to me that way. You can comment, you know, on the Twitter feed, and if you comment on the Twitter feed, I'll go ahead and I'll respond to you. That's also the official Twitch. That's also the official YouTube. So more likely than not, if you comment on those platforms, I'll be the one responding to you, and I definitely like the feedback, whether it's good or bad, folks. You know, it's all good to us. We don't mind when people disagree with us, as long as you do it in a respectful way and you don't get personal. And Hollywood Jackson, we do appreciate you here. He says, "Great show, guys." Thank you so much, Hollywood. And with that, we'll leave you with the last word.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live podcast. You can learn more about Eric Alexander and Find the Live Show on either Twitch, YouTube, or Twitter by searching for BassGod14, that's BASSGOD14, on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. If you are curious about co-host Dave Beatty, you can see some of his art, find social media links, and so much more at his website, DaveBeatty.com. That's DaveBeatty.com. If you enjoyed this episode of the Retro Rogues Live, be sure to like, share, and subscribe.